It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. President Obama has announced that the acting director of the Internal Revenue Service, Stephen Miller, has resigned in the wake of a report that employees at the agency engaged in partisan scrutiny of conservative groups seeking tax-exempt status. The president made the announcement in a televised appearance at the White House. Mr. Obama also said he had directed Treasury Secretary Jack Lew to implement the recommendations contained in the Inspector General's report that brought the situation to light.
The misconduct that uncovered is inexcusable. It's inexcusable, and Americans are right to be angry about it, and I am angry about it. I will not tolerate this kind of behavior in any agency, but especially in the IRS, given the power that it has and the reach that it has in all of our lives. And as I said earlier, it should not matter what political stripe you're from. The fact of the matter is that the IRS has to operate with absolute integrity.
I'm joined now by Richard Rubin, who has been covering this story for Bloomberg News. His coverage is being carried in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, and he joins us by phone from Washington. Richard Rubin, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Stephen Miller was a deputy IRS commissioner and knew about the IRS's selective scrutiny for months without disclosing it to Congress. So it seems to have been an obvious decision for President Obama to let this guy go.
Yeah, clearly somebody was going to need to lose their job as a result of this, at least one person, and Miller was the first one. He's actually still at the agency in his old role or some sort of transition role for the next couple of weeks, and then he'll head out after a 25-year career in the agency.
The information released so far, a timeline that is an appendix of the Inspector General's report, leaves many questions. What are some of the key ones?
So there's three real questions that you can kind of group into broad categories. Number one is, why did they start selectively scrutinizing groups with the word Tea Party and Patriot in them? So you want to know, whose decision was that? Why did they do that? What were they trying to do? The second question is, okay, in June of 2011, one of the people who works for Miller, Lois Lerner, realized they were doing this, red flagged it and said, don't do that. And it took months for that to stop. And at the same time, they never went back and restarted the process. So in June of 2011, after she realized this, she could have said, hey, wait a minute, we don't want to screen all these applications based on these criteria. They're bad criteria. Let's take our pile of applications, yes to pain, let's take them and start over and rescreen in a neutral way once we figure out how we want to do it. They never did that. And then the third question is, so you want to know about that. And the third question is, why didn't Miller and his predecessor, Douglas Shulman, tell Congress what they knew? Congress started getting agitated about this, particularly Republicans, in early 2012. That's right after the letters had gone out to a number of these groups who did what you would do if you were a political group and got this long, detailed questionnaire from the IRS, which is call your member of Congress. And Miller and Shulman apparently didn't know all the details until May 2012, but that's a full year where they knew what was going on and didn't tell Congress. And so that's something that we still don't quite know the full answer to, why they didn't at least say this is being investigated or provide some sort of level of additional detail.
Is there a consensus of opinion about what the IRS should have done?
No, there's really not. This is an incredibly gray area of the law. So if you look at the tax code section 501(c)(4) says these groups that are applying for this status have to be operated exclusively for the purpose of social welfare. And the IRS has interpreted that a little more broadly than exclusively. They've said, well, these groups can have some political activity, political being involvement in campaigns, but that can't be their primary purpose. And so what the IRS's job is, and as groups apply for this status, is to say, okay, are these groups primarily political? And then how do you go about determining that? Well, that's really at the heart of this. It's not clear how they're supposed to determine that. And they didn't have good rules at all internally for how to do that. And just looking at the applications themselves isn't enough. I mean, think about if you're a teacher and you get, you suspect plagiarism. You think of ways to to screen for potential plagiarism or people copying off each other's papers. The IRS does this in individual audits. So these weren't audits, but in individual audits, the IRS has a series of filters that say, there's a big spike in your charitable contributions this year. Maybe we should take a closer look at this. And so they need that kind of screening process, but they just didn't really have a neutral or efficient one for this particular set of tax applications.
Are the Tea Party groups pushing the envelope with trying to be tax-exempt, with trying to have this tax-exempt status as a 501c4 group or social welfare group? If the criteria is primarily political, I mean, aren't these primarily political groups?
Well, it depends on the group. So you can imagine a Tea Party group that is all about issue advocacy, which is okay. So under 501c4, you could, have rallies where you're calling for lower taxes. You could have, send letters to Congress urging them to reduce the size of government. You could protest, whatever, hold rallies, whatever. That kind of activity isn't considered political in this sense. What they can't do is what would be political would be running advertisements for and against candidates, really getting involved in the electoral process. And that's something that some 501c4s have done a lot of. So if you look at the Crossroads GPS group that Karl Rove is involved with, there's some groups on that lean Democratic that have done similar things and really run a lot of advertising. In some ways, those groups have been more active in doing activity that is clearly political in nature than some of the Tea Party groups. Whether that's primarily political is really what's at issue.
We're talking with Richard Rubin of Bloomberg News here on Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You opened your most recent piece by saying what is known so far about the Internal Revenue Service's examination of political nonprofit groups doesn't answer one main question: whether the U.S. tax agency's actions were malicious or just inept. Are we any closer to being able to answer that question today?
Not really. We've got the first hearing tomorrow in the House Ways and Means Committee, and then at least two more scheduled for next week in other committees. And maybe from some of that we'll start getting a sense of some of those questions we talked about before, which is, why did they decide to start screening these applications for the words Tea Party and Patriot and 912, and why did they not stop it sooner? And we really don't know the motivations of these individuals. I can't go find their internal emails, but those are the kinds of things that you look for to establish motivation. Was there some email from some employee in Cincinnati where this processing was done that says, "So glad we're getting those Tea Party guys"? No one has produced anything like that yet, and that's the kind of level of indicators of intent that we probably want to see to be able to know whether this was a partisan attempt motivated by trying to get the Tea Party, or whether it was a much more benign but still embarrassing and wrong-headed failure.
And one of the things that you point out in your piece is that when the question of how to accurately assess the status of these groups and whether they truly were eligible to be considered tax-exempt came up, that the regional offices should have handed this off to Washington, that someone in a higher position should have been looking at this.
Yeah, this is an issue that had gotten so much attention here in Washington. And so what's surprising about this whole thing is that the rules really weren't clear for years. You would think that given all the activity in campaigns by these groups, that somebody in one of the thousands of attorneys at the IRS would have said, "Hey, let's all get together and figure out how we should handle these." Whether that's done in Cincinnati or done in Washington, I don't know. But there was no one who, until very late in the process, who kind of got the people you'd want involved in this, which are senior level attorneys and executives in Washington who can try and help set up some neutral criteria and set it up in a way that you know, involves or incorporates at least some political sensibilities. When people in Washington saw that they had flagged for the word Tea Party, that's when they realized they had a problem. Because in Cincinnati, what, you know, part of the IRS's explanation has been, look, they'd seen some problems, some indications of excessive political activity on some applications from Tea Party groups. So what they did apparently is just lump together, oh, well, we've got this Tea Party issue. Let's just pull out all the Tea Party ones and look at that, which sounds like the way they're presenting it is that was their sorting mechanism to someone in Cincinnati, you know, who's working, trying to process through a pile of paper that might make sense. In Washington, that was explosive.
In your piece, you quoted a former IRS employee in Maryland who said, people give the IRS too much credit for being organized or efficient. That's a very telling comment.
Look, the IRS is a large agency. It's got, you know, 90 to 100,000 employees. They're spread out all over the country. They've got a number of jobs that are more than just receiving your tax return and getting your refund. They've got to process these tax-exempt applications. They've got to look after U.S. corporations' activities all around the world. They're implementing big pieces of the health care law. They've got a lot going on. And it's just not always a well-coordinated operation. That's not probably any different from any other 100,000-person organization. You know, if you've ever worked in a company that big or a school system that big or any sort of organization, when you have that many people spread in that many places, things don't always happen efficiently.
Richard Rubin writes for Bloomberg News, joining us by phone from Washington. Richard, thank you so much for being with us today on Essential Pittsburgh.
Sure, thanks for having me.
Coming up, we'll talk with Jennifer Stefano, State Director of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania, who says she tried to start a Tea Party group and was targeted by the IRS, and Tim Kavanaugh, Executive Editor of the news and opinion website The Daily Caller, joins us as well. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about the IRS's targeting of conservative political groups. Have conservative groups been scrutinized here in Pennsylvania? I'm joined now by phone by Jennifer Stefano, State Director of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania, who says she tried to start a Tea Party group, but when the IRS sent her a mountain of questions, she became frustrated and decided it was easier to quit. Jennifer Stefano, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Also with us by phone from Washington is Tim Kavanaugh, Executive Director of The Daily Caller, a news and opinion website. Tim Kavanaugh, thanks for being on the program. And if it doesn't sound like we have Tim yet, but hopefully we will get him on there. Tim, are you there?
Yes, I am. Nice to be here. Jennifer, nice to speak with you. Paul, nice to talk to you.
Good to have you, Tim. And if you would like to join the conversation or have a comment or question for our guests, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm. You can reach us on Twitter at esspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Jennifer Stefano, what happened when you tried to start a Tea Party group?
Yeah, let me clarify. I was in the process. I was a pregnant stay-at-home mother, wanted to start a Tea Party group because my group that I started, it started with five people, went up to 500. That starts to cost money. You have to rent out meeting spaces, you know, booking the buses for protests. That was all done through me personally. So people started to help by trying to give me money. And, of course, if you really want to invite the IRS and try running all this through your personal bank account. So we thought initially the best way to protect ourselves from the IRS was to just file as an organization. What I started to do was call around other Tea Party groups.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Jennifer. Jennifer, let me jump in.
Yes.
So what did you file to be classified as? Did you file to be, like a lot of these groups, to be a
501c4.
So
we were going to be a 501c4, which is an issue advocacy organization. You can also attach a political action committee to it if you want, which is outright campaigning, or you can just have a 501c4, which can or cannot also do some type of political activity, but it's primarily for issue advocacy. Long story short, just to clarify what you were saying, I started calling the other Tea Party groups, and all the stories started coming in of these questionnaires that were coming back, and that there was a feeling that we were being targeted. I called the IRS to determine if some of these, what I felt, very intrusive questions I was going to have to answer, and it came back yes. Now, and I kind of was amused by the previous interview you did, sort of downplaying it and just saying, oh, the IRS isn't that efficient, and they're just so busy. You always hear this from defenders of big government, like, oh, they're so busy, they have so much to do. Well, number one, they shouldn't. And number two, many of the questions they asked were illegal. They had no right to ask those questions, and we had no impetus to turn them over. We were under no obligation, particularly questions about donors and our personal Facebook pages and the books we were reading and our personal relationships with political candidates. So the idea that somehow this was just a disorganized mess at a low level and, oh, goodness, gosh, oh, golly, is really just disingenuous and undercuts the larger problem with what really was an agenda of the whole left to sort of divide and conquer and marginalize and make to look very bad and obviously scare people in the Tea Party movement. And that came from the top down.
Jennifer, aside from the questions that the group was asking, what proof do you have or what indicates to you that this was part of an agenda or some sort of conspiracy?
Well, I don't believe it's a conspiracy. I don't believe in conspiracies. I think, number one, the IRS came out and admitted they were doing it. It's always helpful when the perpetrator admits to the crime. That's number one. Number two, if you'll remember, the Tea Party was largely marginalized, and people like me were marginalized as sort of crazies, and you know, you just don't like the president because of his skin color. And our basic premise, which is that big government can overwhelm individuals, and that really individuals should be raised. You know, our whole country was founded on individuals are bigger and more powerful than the government. That is that we went to escape those overreaching governments that were unfair and took care of friends or the people who they liked politically. And instead, we were marginalized. And I remember standing outside protesting President Obama, and he pointed out, you know, he said, your enemies are out there. You know, he referred to people like me as your enemies. And that's very Nixon-esque. And it felt very bad to me as an American because I don't consider Barack Obama my enemy, even though I very vigorously disagree with his policies. And I think that type of rhetoric and attitude and the division, right, the 1% versus the 99% and the rich and the, you know, everything.
Okay, Jennifer, let me jump in here. Tim Kavanaugh, when the IRS tries to determine whether a group qualifies for 501c4 status, as it is, in other words, a social welfare group. So what they are trying to determine is whether the group is primarily political, which would not qualify them as a social welfare group, or only partly political, which could, in fact, qualify for them to be under 501c4 status. So what is the difference between simply trying to make that determination and what the IRS has done in this case?
I would say certainly the sorting mechanism that you discussed just a few minutes ago is the difference. I mean, you know, there was a very good front page story in the USA Today yesterday noting that people who had, you know, progressive or organizing or, you know, such terms in their filings did not get this kind of scrutiny in the same way that people with Tea Party or Constitution or 912 or, you know, these other things. This was decided that this was going to be the sorting mechanism. We were going to use these particular search terms. And again, although it was later decided that this isn't really working, we should walk this back, that continued not to happen. And these many of these groups are still waiting after 3 years or so. The division between social welfare and political action is obviously nebulous. I used to work for a 501c3 doing journalism, and there were some bright lines.
And what is just so people know, what is a 501c3 as opposed to a 501c4?
More of an education type thing. That's why it came in under journalism. But, you know, we were subject, for example, to the obsolete equal time restriction that they used to have on network TV, where if you interviewed one candidate, you had to interview the opposite side candidate and all that kind of thing. We're not allowed to endorse. We were a magazine, but we couldn't make political endorsements or anything like that, and had to stick just to issue advocacy. primarily, although you could report on campaigns and stuff, you couldn't, really take a side openly. In C4s, it's a different thing. Maybe they're going to revisit the whole category at some point. But Organizing for Action, which started out as President Obama's campaign group, Organizing for America, that's a C4. And are we really, nobody can say with a straight face that that's not a political organization. Under IRS rules, obviously it's not considered primarily a political organization, but are they doing any more for social welfare than somebody who says we should stick up for the Bill of Rights or we should do other things that we think are important issues? The IRS put itself into a position, wittingly or not, whether through prior planning or not, it put itself into the position of deciding, if you're about educating people about the Constitution, that's political advocacy that we consider a problem. If you're about reelecting the president, which seems to me pretty direct political activity, you're not.
What in a USA Today op-ed, Stephen Miller, who has, as we mentioned, resigned, said that the agency was guilty of a lack of sensitivity and took a shortcut in determining which groups needed special screening. Does this, however, make them guilty of a broader conspiracy?
Before getting into the word, the term conspiracy, I would say there is a phenomenon, and I think in most cases where you see confirmation bias or you see other sorts of bias, the phenomenon you're seeing is that the fish don't feel the water. It is quite possible. I can't read Lois Lerner's mind, but I think it's quite possible to, in her view, clearly, somebody who's in the Tea Party, they're doing political activity. That's not about social welfare. But yeah, somebody who's in Organizing for Action, no, that's social welfare. They're doing what's good for America because the president said so.
412-246-2002 is the number to call if you'd like to take part in the conversation. We have Ben from the South Side on the line. Ben, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you, Ben. Welcome to the show. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Thank you. I just have a question. Since this issue broke, most of the coverage that we've seen of it has concerned, how did the IRS go about determining whether these groups were 501c3 or 501c4, and how did they make that determination? Did they even have the right to make that determination, et cetera? And most of it has been presented as significant government intrusion. One aspect of this that I haven't really seen addressed, and I'm very interested in, of course, over the last few years, we've all seen many, many news stories concerning the hundreds of millions of dollars that have poured into Tea Party groups across the country, contributed by people like the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelson and so forth. And I'm curious if that might be one aspect of this issue, that the IRS simply had to address this giant flow of money pouring through these, superficially, grassroots organizations. And I know many of them, in fact, are, but many of them are definitely not. And so I'm curious if that's one aspect of this that maybe should be looked at a little bit as well as, obviously I don't agree that the IRS should have been as intrusive as it apparently was. That's ridiculous. They clearly overstepped their bounds and were very insensitive in how they handled it. But I wondered if that's one aspect of it that should be looked at in addition.
Jennifer,
go
ahead.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for the call, Ben. Go ahead, Jennifer.
This is such a magnificent question. First of all, people in America have the fundamental right to put their money wherever they want. It is not the IRS's job to determine if too much money is flowing to a particular organization, a person, or a corporation. That is just fundamentally not their job. And if you think that somehow that only people who believe in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to go out for freedom are able to go raise money, sometimes from rich people, and that the left somehow doesn't do that, is utterly ridiculous. And number three, the other thing is that the idea that somehow these are superficial groups, well, it is not up to the IRS or anyone else in government to determine what is and what is not superficial as an organization. This is why the IRS should be very limited in their scope. That is not the IRS's job. That is not what they are there to do. They are there to determine whether or not an organization receives tax-exempt status.
And let me
the amount of money taken, and that's not
Jennifer,
determined by the money.
Jennifer, let me jump in. Jennifer, I have a question for you. Why should your organization have been considered tax-exempt?
Well, and that's Okay, that is a question. So the question becomes, why should a tax exempt to do issue advocacy? Because in America, organizations that do issue advocacy, whether you're out there advocating for Barack Obama's policies or whether you're out there advocating for the exact opposite policies, that type of issue advocacy, fundamentally in America, we offer tax exempt status to. Now, but interestingly, in a 501c4, donors do not get a tax exemption. Only in a 501c3 do donors get a tax exemption for donating to the group. So anyone who gives to a 501c4, whether it's Obama's organization or some little Tea Party group or some big Tea Party group, none of those donors get a tax break for it. But they, as Americans, have the right to invest their money, whether it's in the Communist Party of America or whether it's the Freedom and Liberty Tea Party of America. And that is what we call fairness. And if the scrutiny that one would give to Obama for America should be no more or less than we give to the Freedom or the Tea Party groups of America. That is a fundamental basis of fairness that our system was founded on. And I think most Americans, regardless of political party or beliefs, believe in and like to rely on, which is why this is such an outrageous violation of all we as Americans united hold dear.
Jennifer, let me jump in. What questions, just to make sure that people understand exactly how the IRS approached you, what questions did they ask you or the groups that you were in contact with that were like-minded Tea Party type patriot groups that as they were identified by the IRS?
Probably the most egregious and frankly fundamentally the illegal one was asking who your donors are, because organizations that apply for 501c4 status have donor anonymity, meaning people can give money to those groups, whether it's Obama's group or whether it's a left or right wing group, it doesn't matter, and that the IRS may not see the donors list. That is extremely important. Also, what books are you reading? Send us your emails. These are massive intrusions into privacy, and they were beyond the scope of what the IRS was expected to do. So the idea that somehow this was some administrative snafu or, oh gosh, they're disorganized, is fundamentally wrong.
That is misinformation. Tim Kavanaugh, does Jennifer's situation stack up with others that you have heard?
Yeah, and we need to be clear, and you know, the IG report that came out the other day is just the beginning of finding out the scope of this. But we need to know, you know, how many. Certainly, there are lots of folks coming forward now saying I was targeted by the IRS, and you know, some of those claims will turn out to be legitimate, some won't. But yeah, at this point, given what we've heard just over the last few days, and again, this started from a confession from the IRS. This is not, you know, conspiracy theorizing or anything. I would err on the side of checking out all of those claims and making sure thinking there's a good possibility that these people are telling the truth, because many of them were saying it for many years, and nobody listened until the other day.
I want to go back to the point about the IRS. People talk about, the government is oftentimes criticized for being incompetent, for being inept. So when people say that the IRS gets too much credit for being organized, inefficient, why should we assume that they are, if in fact you buy the point that government does not operate efficiently, why should we assume that the IRS does any better than, say, the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare? I'm sorry, Tim, you go ahead.
Could you rephrase that a little bit? The IRS does any better than...
Is the IRS... What? I mean, why should we assume that the IRS is any more organized or any more efficient than other branches of government which are criticized for not being efficient?
No particular reason, but they were certainly organized enough to get all of these letters out and to... I think we should, you know, keep the large picture in mind here. We have, a government agency, the most powerful in many ways government agency with that power to tax, to take your money that you're not willing to, you don't want to give up. I don't think Wesley Snipes was wanting to give his money to the IRS. And they are in. They're now making determinations about, you know, who's legit and who's not in terms of their political view. And so,
do we know that for a fact?
They admitted it.
Yes,
I mean, they
yes.
came
I mean,
out
it,
the
that,
other
that,
day,
that's all,
and they
it's
admitted
in the
it.
IG report. And the and
it's all
again,
there.
I mean, the president yesterday said it was unacceptable, and you know, he's angry about it. And I yes, that is the issue that the, that these terms were selected in a way that singled out one political group. And again, I mean, this has been checked again. It's been fact checked again by the press, by USA Today, by others who are on this story now, stuff that's outside the scope of the IG's report, which is pretty damning to begin with, have made a case that I don't think it would be wise, really, at this point to say, we're still waiting for all the facts to come in on that particular point. There was targeting of groups that were conservative in ways that there were not targeting of groups that were liberal. And I use those terms advisedly because I'm not sure, you know, who's who all the time myself.
And, Paul, I mean, just let me point out to you that this is not something where the burden of proof now falls on the people bringing forward the complaint. The only reason you're having me on to discuss this is not because I brought it forward and you're interested in helping me uncover the story. The fact of the matter is the IRS came out. They admitted it. The President of the United States came out, admitted it.
Right.
A report came out detailing the abuses. And then the head of the IRS was fired for it. And now there needs to be further investigation into where this started and how it happened.
Jennifer, we're running out of time. I wanted to ask you one last question. Had you considered simply operating, setting up your organization the way you had wanted to, and simply waiting until or unless you were audited?
Oh, my gosh, why would I do that? At the time, I was a pregnant stay-at-home mother. We didn't have a lot of money. We were on one income. My husband was fearful for his job. You know, could they go after him? Could he lose his job? Could I lose? You know, I had lawyers advising me it would have cost $5,000 to just put one on retainer to just do all the initial work, and then, God forbid, the IRS started coming after me. It could cost me my house. And I was told when I called the IRS and asked about these other questions Tea Party groups were getting that these were considered sworn statements, and that if you didn't turn over your personal information and things that I thought and we now see were totally inappropriate and often illegal, that it would be considered perjury, and with it, perjury carries jail time. Now I'm about to give birth, and I have visions of myself giving birth in a jail cell simply because I wanted to exercise my First Amendment right and go out and talk about the United States Constitution. You know, one day, this could be reversed. This could be happening to, you know, right now they are targeting the political opposition of the sitting president. Now that's a huge problem, but one day the sitting president could be very different, and it'd be wrong for them to target the left or anyone else who does this. I think fundamentally this isn't about efficiency or organization or who done it. This is an enormous problem and proves all that we on the right have fought for.
Jennifer, I got
a government that is unlimited can abuse the individual.
If I could,
I'm afraid we are out of time. I wish we could go on with this discussion, but I do appreciate both of you taking the time to join us to shed some light on this situation, and especially Jennifer Stefano for sharing her firsthand experience. Jennifer is the State Director of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you.
And also Tim Cavanaugh, Executive Director of the Daily Caller. Thank you, Tim.
Thanks a lot. Nice to be here.
Coming up, we'll learn how City of Play is helping people connect to their environment, and contributor Elaine LaBombe on Traveling with Pets. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.